Oh me, oh my. Look at that fish.
What is up? Welcome to the Smalley Talk Podcast. This is your host, Josh Rinko. On the other line of the interwebs, I got my boy Christian Vaughn. What's up, my brother?
Coming at you from the dark web tonight. just had to do it.
Silk yeah, Road, dude.
Yeah, right. The guy's in jail for life. It's crazy. But yeah, man, we haven't talked really in a while. So I think maybe the last time we talked was the last time we recorded a podcast. So that was like 2 weeks ago. So I don't even know who the hell you are right now, dude. You could be anybody.
I'm a man. I'm a man who's caught 720 since the last time we talked. So, you know,
so what is that? What does that take you up to on the year?
26.
That's a crazy number.
It's the best year so far. I mean,
Weird. Where we live and how often you fish, that's a pretty damn good number. 27's legit.
26. But
I'm giving you an extra one.
I mean, the thing is, we honestly still have our best, you know, two of the 4 months that are our best 20-inch months coming up. So, you know, late November, all through December. Sometimes it depends. Some years I feel like December's more productive. Other years I feel like January and February are more productive.
I'm pretty sure you're going to be signing tits at the end of this episode or the end of the season. Just
absolutely, dude.
Just women, up,
baby.
Just women
signing babies,
like, signing babies, signing tits, signing all the stuff. People are just going to be like, "Oh my god, are you that guy that caught 26?" 20-inch smallmouth? Please sign my diploma, sir. That's freaking awesome, dude. I do want to hear all about the Susquehanna trip that you just went on, but we do have a guest tonight, so probably can't go into a ton of details, but
hey, we can give a really quick sort of recap of it.
Give us tips. All right.
Even the last episode, I caught a 21 on White River with Burton. So that was on the prototype bait, which was freaking sick.
Have you guys got a name for it yet?
Dude, it's the most intensive naming process I've been through with anything, even more so than naming a Cheegan. Like this bait
or maybe your children. But
no, children were we just came up with that in a couple of hours.
That makes sense. That checks
yeah, we
out.
Need to yeah, the bait name is still up in the air, but yeah, it's caught a 21 bait with Burton, and then I went to the Susquehanna for fish for 3.5 days with old Pops and my brother. There was a big tournament that was going on the next weekend, and there's some guys out there practicing and that sort of thing. But yeah, it was pretty low key for the Susquehanna. There wasn't a ton of guys out there. And dude, it was, I would say to sum it up, it was pretty tough to find the fish. Honestly, it was like the fish were in full fall, like wolf pack mode. So like you would go a couple miles in the river and not see a single fish, and it was gin clear. It's the clearest I've ever seen that river. It's wild clear. I mean, unlimited. You could see down 10 feet, no problem. And that was, you know, that river doesn't get that much deeper than that in most spots. So you would, you know, when you would find fish, especially in pools, that you'd spook them, but got on a pattern where they would push bait into areas where there were like, there's like a barrier. It could be a ledge system, could be a dam, but there were some fast water present. And dude, they were hammering stuff in that fast water, like choking it. Like what you've heard about your whole life for fall fishing, where they're just fall feed bagging. That was what they were doing. And the big ones were, I mean,
that's
dude,
so,
I,
I'm so happy for you. I'm just so happy. I'm so happy you had a great trip. Yeah, that's awesome, dude. That's great.
Three of them on the 320s on the prototype, 320s on the but all three of the other ones came on the mag draft. So
what are the I don't want to open up a naming by committee situation for you, but what are the this is like a baby, people are asking, well, what names are you liking right now? What names are at the top of your list? What names are at the top of Josh? And you're not the sole voice over there. You know, there are other people with input. What are the Josh Shrinko top of the tilt names right now?
So it's kind of food themed. So that's all I will say. It has to be food themed. We have the Shadrito. That's Chad. One of them.
Chad.
The Shadrito. We got the Munchie Shad. That's towards the top of the list. And we're gonna have them multiple sizes. So I was thinking, the Mega Munchie, the Munchie, and the Mini Munchie. So that's why I'm kind of thinking about that. But those are probably the two that I'm digging. There's a lot of names on the table, a lot of ideas. Yeah. So we'll see.
Well, I gotta be honest, dude. You're too skinny now to be thinking. Oh, did I lose you? Uh-oh. I think I lost you, buddy.
I all I heard was I'm too skinny. I didn't hear this.
You just left the show. I said, you're too skinny to be thinking as if you were still a fat man. All your your baits are all snack themed. You're just, maybe that's it. Maybe it's because you've been eating healthy. You're just like, I have to snack right now. That's all I think about.
Yeah. My daughter calling my man boobs out would not line up.
Oh, I hate that so much. All right, dude, let's get our guest in here. All right. I'm very excited about this guest. Joining us right now is Kyle Zimple. Is that Zimple or is that how you pronounce it, Kyle?
Yeah, Zimple.
Okay. Who is the owner / operator / lead guide for a very cool guide service up in on the lower Wisconsin River, which the Wisconsin River is one of our favorites, Black Earth Angling. So welcome to the show, Kyle.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, man, we've been Josh and I've been following your guys' guide service for a really long time. I think maybe the first video that we saw that really like we were sending to each other, kind of like nerding out on, was you guys did one on I think it was just titled The Crash. And you obviously had like a professional film crew, like interview you and like ride on the boat with you and took some really like stellar smallmouth footage. So, which I think one thing about like smallmouth guys, is like we appreciate when people take the time and put in the energy to make like really good content that highlights the fish that we love. So I thought it was awesome. And tell us a little bit about who you are and what your business is about and where you guys are at.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm born and raised Wisconsin guy. I've done a good amount of travel in my life and always found myself coming back to Wisconsin. Smallmouth have my heart and, this is arguably the best place for it. So I call this home now, and I've been running my guide operation for 12 years now, and kind of started as a side hustle with my fishing buddies who we all live together, and morphed into pretty quickly once I kind of dialed in the smallmouth program. People started seeing it, and it happened kind of very quickly, and I had not intended to have a guide service as my full-time job. It's kind of a cool thing to happen, and have taken it to, quite a great operation now. But yeah, it's been a great, you know, pinch me moment to like have kind of, I don't want to say discovered a fishery, but like definitely like been the person to figure it out from a fly rod standpoint. No one had really figured out this fishery and how to approach it and how to find success out there. And so it's been quite a journey of, you know, theories coming and going and, you know, mm-hmm. thinking you had it all figured out and then finding out that you're farther from the truth than you started. So yeah, it's been a fun journey, you know, and, you want to always like look at a magazine article and be like, oh, that's how you do it. But, you know, nobody was writing those on this place. And so it's been kind of cool writing the book on chasing smallmouth on the fly out there.
Yeah, dude, it's, you're pretty young. Like it's, how you said you've been running your guide business for 12 years. How old were you when you started that?
24.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. So yeah, you're like exactly our age then. I like the concept too of like the knowledge arc, because I think about that a lot in like my business, and I'm sure Josh does too, where you like when you first start off, you know, you like you think you're an expert, and then you gain a little bit more knowledge and you realize I don't know anything, and then you get, you know, and it's like a bell curve, I think, to a certain extent, right? And then you probably now feel like you're back on the rise up, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe now you are
an expert, for now. You know?
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
It's a pretty cool. So you're from Wisconsin, like the same area where you run your service now?
A couple hours north. I'm from Wausau. So you know, I grew up fishing the Wisconsin River, you know, that runs through that area, and you know, grew up river ratting it up there, and you know, really hadn't, you know, you always get excited when you caught a smallmouth because they fought really hard. But, you know, I didn't really pick up a fly rod until, you know, when I got into college, basically. So, like, smallmouth fishing to me was the Wisconsin River up north, where it's boulders and tannic water. And, you know, it looked like classic smallmouth water that you read about. And, you know, coming down to southern Wisconsin and, you know, I think it was a drought year. And so the trout fishing was really not good. And I towed my little boat around with my Nissan Altima, and you know, was that guy pulling a boat with a car way too small to be doing that. And talked to the guy who ran a fly shop down here, and he's like, oh, you gotta go check out the, you know, the lower Wisconsin, there's great smallmouth fishing out there. And I got out there and I'm like, man, this guy has never seeing good smallmouth water before. There's not a rock to be seen, man. Like, what is this guy talking about? And like, just got my butt kicked, you know, for like the first couple outings. Like, I don't think I caught a fish for like the first, like, I don't know, 3-4 outings, like completely skunked, you know, like having no clue what I was doing. You know, running into stuff and shearing off my, you know, shear pins, and just like mayhem, right? Like, I didn't ever want to go back out there again. You know? Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you guys are you guys south of the Dells then? Like, where you, when you talk lower Wisconsin, I guess. So I've been to upper Wisconsin several times, like up Wausau. We'll just leave it at Wausau. Since,
sure.
You know, yep. up and north of there. And yeah, like you said, it's like super bouldery, you know, riffle run, you know, riffle pool, you know, and the substrate's mostly rock, super tannic water. And then doesn't it hit the Dells, you know, I guess it's around where the highway, where 90 crosses, around there, but you guys are south of that even, right?
Yeah. Yeah. That's like where we're located. I mean, we kind of work, you know, all that, what I would consider lower river, which I, you know, is kind of like from the Dells down or from like Castle Rock down, is what I would kind of consider. Like, once you get into those sand counties and it changes from rocky substrate to more sand, that in my opinion is kind of like the lower river.
Yeah.
There's like the designated like lower Wisconsin Riverway, which would be from Sauk City down, and that's undammed for 90, you know, 2.3 miles to the Mississippi, which is an amazing wilderness area. You know, that is as wild as it gets, you know.
Nice. Yeah, it's very different. Like Josh and you guys were kind of talking about this before we got on the air, but Josh just did a tournament out there. And he was like telling me where he's going, and obviously I've seen your videos and stuff, so I know the substrate's very different, but like just looking at it like on satellite, It's crazy. Like, yeah. I mean, yeah. It's so different. It's just sand, right? I mean,
yeah, it really is. Much. Like, I mean, I guide barefoot 3 months. I mean, I don't put shoes on until I get out of my boat. You know, I wade barefoot out there. It's like, it is literally just sand.
That's so crazy.
You know, except for like little pockets here and there of where you're going to run into some, you know, rocky or gravel substrate. But for the most part, it is just really fine, sand. Wonderful like sand. Beach, yeah. Like beach sand. Yeah. Like Bahamas beach sand. Yep.
I mean, it's so weird too. Like we have like a fairly fine gravel substrate on most of the, and most of the rivers around here are like gravel, sandy substrate. Mm-hmm. And even that is subject to massive changes year in and year out with flooding and stuff like that. How do you go about, like, you basically probably have to start from scratch. Like
every year.
Like, and within the year, I'm assuming.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Talk to that a little bit. I mean, cause that's gotta be, I mean, how do you go about doing that? Does that just require more scout days than you would otherwise attribute? Do you just kind of learn on the fly as you're out there day to day? Like, how do you go about kind of breaking down the river again, over and over and over again?
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, I don't have the scout days anymore. Like, you know, we kind of all of us are fully on, you know, 6-7 days a week guiding. So you have to learn on the fly. And, you know, the biggest thing is kind of changing the mentality of like looking for, you know, or having spots, you know, because you can't get attached to anything because it's always in motion. And so it might be good for a couple of days and then suddenly, you know, the sand shifts and that spot is filled in with sand, or, you know, it's gotten too deep or not deep enough, or, you know, and the fish will start to move out of those areas. And so you kind of like start to see, you know, I've done it long enough where I can start to see what's going to be happening in the future, right? Like I can almost see the future, like, okay, so it's starting to cut hard here, you know, in a couple of weeks, maybe a month, like it's going to keep an eye on this. Right. And like, oh yeah, it's doing what I thought. It's like digging. And, or it's like change, you know, the current's like shifting from one side of the river to the other here. And then you just kind of keep an eye on those places as you're out there going by day in, day out. And, you know, maybe it's a year, maybe it's, you know, 3 months, and suddenly like you start to poke in there a little bit and fish in there and be like, oh yeah, all right, they moved in here. And so it's, you know, it's a really weird mental space you got to have yourself in out there. And like, I'm out there every single day of the summer and I still get super frustrated with it. You know what I mean? It's just, it's a frustrating fishery, right? And it's like a never-ending battle, because like you'll find these, you'll get a spot and you're like, man, this is like you couldn't draw it up any better, right? You know, like this bait funnel, like there's timber here, there's depth, the drop off, I mean, it's just like everything you want, hard current edge, and you just, you're like, man, you can go there day in and day out for a couple days, maybe a whole season, and then suddenly it just starts to vanish on you.
That's wild.
And then you gotta, and that's the hard part, is you gotta kind of cut ties with that connection to maybe that area or that spot, and like, okay, it's just not gonna happen here anymore. And then like, now I'm starting over, like, where is that next spot where those fish, like, where are these fish going to, right? Where they move to, because they're obviously not here anymore, but they're still in the river, so like, you know, where is that now, you know? And then the puzzle begins.
I mean, you're probably just an expert at reading. I mean, I would say even like we get lazy to a certain extent, right? Because there's like a boulder that you just know that, mm-hmm. like, really, no matter what the river level is, there's going to be a few stacked up behind like a log jam or a boulder or something like that. But with that dynamic of a situation, it seems like you just have to watch the water. You just have to watch the current. You just have to watch it every single day, see what it's doing. It's an interesting thing. And I'd probably not a problem set that a lot of guides that are on the river every day have to deal with, you know.
Definitely not. Looking back at it, you're like, what did you
not the easiest
what did you do to yourself, man? Like, why did you pick a place that never stays the same? You know, there's no end to it, but also keeps you from like burning out. And that, you know, like I can go back up to my, you know, home stretch of water up in Wausau, and like there's going to be a small behind that boulder and one right over here, and this bank is going to be good. And like, you know, it's it, And if you have to be out there day in and day out, like, it does get old after a while doing the same thing over and over. And, you know, I know, you know, forage changes and stuff like that, but like the spots oftentimes are the same as they were for, you know, years and years. So right. It definitely keeps things fresh and keeps you on your toes and, you know, forces you to angle, right? Like to pay attention. And it doesn't, you know, it doesn't matter whether you're spin fishing or fly fishing out there. Like I get both, you know, both types of anglers and you know, changing tactics and trying to figure it out, you know. It's a fun place to work, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, how long you guys probably do have freeze up and stuff where you're at, right?
Yeah, so the big thing that we deal with is that the Wisconsin River starts, like, you know, on the northern border of Wisconsin, basically.
Right.
And so, like, you know, a lot of guys south of us, you know, maybe in Illinois, like their season can be extended quite a ways. Or even like start earlier, but like our water's coming from such a cold place and it doesn't have, you know, a lot of time to warm up. So like in the fall here, like as soon as you start to get those real, like, you know, below freezing nights up north, like that temperature, just like, it takes, you know, only a couple of days and it's like, boom, like plummeted. Wow. Yeah. So, I mean, it can happen overnight sometimes. And, you know, like you just hope that you get maybe some sunny days to kind of stretch it a few more and before the fish all like get out of there. Yeah.
And do you find that they like kind of, oh, go ahead, Josh.
No, sorry. So one of the things I was actually most excited about to ask you, because as Chris alluded to, I was out there a couple months ago and first time on that section of river. And it was, yeah, I looked at Google Maps or Google Earth so much before I went out there and like was trying to make sense of it. And I was kind of like, dude, what the hell am I going to do when I get out there? Like, I was just like, you know, I was even I was watching a lot of your guys' content. You know, I was trying to read on forums. There's not a lot of stuff out there about that river. Even the locals, like you talk to them, I didn't talk to anybody that was like into bass fishing on the river out there. Most of the people either fish lakes or, you know, a lot of cat fishermen out there, talked to a lot of
yeah.
But the one thing that it does have in common with the upper Wisconsin, which we fish, and I've always wanted to ask someone this that has intimate knowledge of a river that sets up like this, because Wisconsin River, for those who don't know, it's like the nickname is America's hardest working river. And I think it gets that because there's a lot of dams. There's tons of dams. There's like dams and impoundments, flowages, reservoirs, whatever you want to call it. What the hell do those fish do and how do they relate to those impoundments? Like when you have a river like that's free flowing for, you know, 50 miles or so, and then it turns into a reservoir, what percentage of those fish run down into the reservoir? What percentage are native to the river? Like what? How does that set up? And if you could explain just like the kind of the movement patterns of smallmouth within those type of areas.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's a great question, you know, and it is America's most dammed river for that's why it has that nickname. It has the most dams of any river in the United States. Nice. Yeah. And I mean, it does make it very interesting. And it's part of why it is, I think, also such a good smallmouth fishery is because of those impoundments, because they have good wintering areas. But I mean, let's just take like that lower section, right? The 92.3 miles of undammed river, right? And those, like they've, you know, the DNR has tagged some fish and they found fish that have traveled over 50 miles to their wintering grounds. I mean,
if I was a fish, I'd travel 50 miles and not have to stay in the
river. Yeah. I mean, I don't think they get nearly enough credit for what they're capable of and how much they actually move around. You know, I think everybody thinks of these bass as like these, you know, farm pond, lazy, easy to catch creatures, you know, but, you know, they're the native fish here and they've survived all this time for a reason, right? They're badass fish. In those sandy rivers, if you've noticed while you're fishing there's not a lot of like that slow slack water you know, along the edges especially, right? It's like everything is kind of moving, right? Some's just moving a little faster than the other stuff, right? But it's all moving. So none of that water is a lot of it is like not great wintering water. And also, you know, the average depth out there is like 4 feet throughout the entire 92 miles. You know what I mean? Like it's a shallow sandy river that generally is pretty swift. It doesn't appear to be very swift because you don't have the white water and the rapids and the things that tell your brain, oh, you know, this is scary and dangerous, right? But it has a lot of like undertow type currents, you know, where it's falling over sandbar ledges and stuff like that. So like a lot of that water is just always in motion. So those fish can't really winter very well in a lot of those places. There's kind of very small places for them to winter within that large section. So those fish are forced to move and travel to, you know, either down to the Mississippi, up to where like the dam is like a, I mean, it's incredible how many fish are up there in the, you know, in the winter months. Like they just all pile in there. And I mean, it's not just smallmouth. It's all those fish that need a wintering area. Yeah. And they'll just start dumping in. And same thing, like as you get above that dam and into those other midsections, like you can kind of fish those fish as they drop down into the reservoir, you know, and the further north you go, kind of the more, I would say, dramatic or predictable it can be, just because it gets colder faster and the days get shorter up there. And I, you know, I think some of it's photo period. I think some of it's temperature, you know, I think there's a mixture of the two that work together there, to, you know, trigger those fish to start moving. But I mean, it, you know, you can fish that river before you call it the dispersal, and it's like void of life, you know, as far as like a bass is concerned, you know what I mean? It's like, they're just not there at all. Like it's nothing you're doing wrong. They're just literally not there.
That's what I was getting at. Cause I was like, you know, when we go to, we travel all over the country to fish for smallmouth, and we're mainly river guys. So we've seen, you know, where we live, and we're from Indiana, it's much milder, even though we're not that far away from you. Like we rarely get like freeze ups on a river. Like we usually have open water all year round. So, those fish don't like, there's never that like mass, like boom, they're gone. Like the fish kind of will stay active, and they will, a lot of our rivers, they'll drop into winter holes in the river. You'll see that. But like I found, as you go kind of go up north where it gets colder faster, there's like this tipping point where if you go too late in the year, dude, it's like, where did all the fish go?
Yeah.
It's crazy. And I've like, you know, sometimes we've gone up to like the Muskegon River, for instance, before, and it's like you go up there too late in the year, it's like, dude, they are gone. Yeah. Like
what a trip. What a trip. We just wasted a whole weekend to come up here and fish in no water. Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah. So you said right now, so that's for you guys, is that like early October, does that start to kind of dwindle?
Okay. Yeah, I would say right around now is kind of like, you know, it's kind of occurring as we speak, you know, and some years they'll start to move a little faster than others. I mean, we had a really, really warm, dry, low water September. And so like, I feel like the active, you know, the fish being active and sticking around, you know, kind of hung around a lot later than I had seen in the past, I guess. Or at least actively feeding, where, you know, you were seeing fish still blowing up on bait fish here and there. They'll start to fall into like some of the deeper water. And like almost like in preparation for like evacuating out of there, you know, but it's, yeah, it's, you know, all of a sudden you get out there one day and it's like, well, they're gone. Yeah. So then
you guys have a lot of muskie where you're at too, or is it just mostly smallmouth? And
no, there's muskie in all of the Wisconsin River. Yeah. I would say like the numbers increase as you go further north, obviously, like, you know, I would say like midway through, you know, like, I'd say the middle part of the state south is like kind of out of their native range. And so, but there's been a lot of like stocking in the lakes and stuff. And then you get spillover and populations in the river due to that. And so, yeah, those muskies, and a lot of those muskies in the Wisconsin will hang around the dams. Like that's where the most, you know, that's where the food is most prevalent. Yeah, they definitely have some predators out there. That's for sure.
Yeah. I just didn't know if you guys like switched to muskie at a certain point in the year, or if you just kind of, go yeah. target them in the reservoir or target them at the top of the flowages or like kind of what you get, or if you could just cancel, I don't know.
Yeah, no, we definitely, you know, we'll start to fish a little bit more like dual purpose. So like, you know, just throw larger flies and start running wire leader pretty much every day on any fly you're throwing, just because they do start to get a little more active. And, you know, as those smallmouths start to drop out, you know, you're kind of, you know, that's what fish you're after then at that point. You'll still pick up some really nice big smallmouth doing that. But, you know, like usually once we hit like mid to late September and then most of October is, you know, more focused on the toothy critters, just because they're most active, you know, and the smallmouth are starting to settle down. And maybe in the morning we'll fish for toothy critters. And then as it warms up and the smallmouth may get active, we'll just switch gears.
So you're pretty much like May to September for your smallmouth season for the most
Yeah, part. Yeah. May to about the end of September, I'd say, is like kind of the, you can count on it window of time for sure.
Yeah. So the big thing though is obviously what you guys refer to. And I don't know who coined the term. Is this a, one of your original? Is this Kyle Zippler's? Okay. It's, you guys refer to it as the crash.
Mm-hmm.
So when does that start, and just kind of explain what it is?
Yeah. So, that's really what hooked me into all of it. Right. That's what got me going here. And, to kind of tell how it all came to fruition. Right. And how I now make a living guiding on this river is that just getting my ass kicked over and over on that river. And we did a multiple day float with a couple of my buddies, and you know, we didn't caught anything, you know, a couple of little smallmouth here and there, but like really just struggled. And we came around this bend, you know, this like bend, this down tree, and we cast in there, and it, like the two guys hooked up at the same time, and then there was more fish like chomping and following our flies, and we're like, what a spot, you know, like holy smokes, you know. I think we had lost our anchor like on day one of a 3-day float, so like one of us just jumped off the boat and like chest deep water and just held the boat so the other guys could fish in there. And like, we just wailed on them. Right. I mean, I think we caught like, you know, 20, 30 fish out of this, like one little, you know, Volkswagen size hole. And they would just like devour your fly in there, you know? And it was just like, whoa, that was wild. Right. And so like, that got me thinking. And, so I would, you know, like at the time I had just a little boat and you could putter around, but like to float through and then like get back to where you came from was a lot. So I dropped the boat, and then my buddy would get done with work and pick me up at the, you know, 9 miles down river. And sometimes I beat him there. Sometimes he'd be waiting for me, and I just like do that. And suddenly started to kind of come or like starting to put some of the pieces together that, oh, this is actually is like something that's happening out here, other than this one spot that we stumbled across, right? And like started to learn like what to look for. But what this is basically the smallmouth bass don't have the crayfish populations that they do in a lot of the other rivers. So that's, you know, suddenly not their number one food source. It's bait fish. And any fishery where bait fish is the main food, you'll find that fish generally will school up, right? And, you know, up north, you'll see some smallmouth in like these wolf packs of sometimes 3, 4, 5 fish or something like that, but not like 30, 40, 50 fish in a school, or, you know, like that. That's something you don't see anywhere else that I've come across anyways, unless you're like maybe the spring or fall when they're kind of schooled up. But this is like in the middle of the summer. And so as the waters begin to warm, they start to corral these bait fish. And so they work in these big schools, and they just like, they'll push bait fish to, you know, in these certain areas, right? Like they'll corral them into whatever area is good to push them to the surface and get them balled up basically, right? And then it's just mayhem. As soon, you know, like the bait fish start raining out of the water and the bass are behind them, and you know, it's just like you oftentimes hear it before you see it. Wow. Yeah, and it's very, very, very saltwater like if you've ever seen like the striper bait blitz or, you know, the, you know, bluefish and that type of stuff, it's like a, you know, miniature version of that in fresh water, but with smallmouth bass. And then occasionally you get like the white bass in, you know, mixed into that, and then it's just like absolute mayhem. Yeah, I mean, you can sit on some of the, you know, these spots, it's just, yeah, it's crazy. You know, all the fish will, you know, and sometimes it's like the fish will migrate at certain times of the day to these areas off of like the wood and the grass and the places that they're normally hanging out during the day, you know, or maybe in the morning they'll all be like together and then they'll kind of slowly disperse their way back to where they're going to feed for the day and then come back together in the evening. Yeah. So it's something that I don't think really anyone had keyed on to, or just, you know, the river is so difficult to navigate. Most people just don't want to go out there with their and ruin their boat. You know, I just had a cheap boat and started really poking around hard. You know, once I kind of got a taste of it and I was like, this is crazy. And then like you go and try to read about it, and no one was writing anything about it. Right. I don't know. Like, maybe I discovered this. I mean, obviously people are out there seeing this happen, the cat fishermen especially, they could tell you where all the spots are, you know, because they're out there just sitting and watching it all happen.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, that's the first one person to kind of get after it in the lower reaches with like targeting them specifically top water with the fly. So
I mean, it's no real wonder, right, that like when you started offering trips and just showed a little bit about what it was.
It looks
pretty electric. It looks really, really cool. So,
yeah. And I mean, you know, I've been lucky enough to do smallmouth fishing around the state quite a bit and in the Midwest. And like, it just, when you hit it, it's like, I mean, I don't know if you will have a better, you know, smallmouth experience. I mean, it's so unique and like one of a kind. You're just wowed by it. I mean, I've been doing it for 12 years. Like my hair is standing up right now to even talking about it. You know, it's absolutely just such a sight to see, because the neat thing about it is like, if you removed yourself from that situation, like that's still happening there without you. Right. It's it's a natural phenomenon that's going on. Like, and like you get to be part of something that's already occurring. Right. And peel a couple fish out of that. But whether you were there or not, those fish would still be blowing up on the surface and it'd all be happening. You know, and you know what's going on somewhere else while you're sitting at one of the spots too, you know. And so I think that's just one of the neat things about it. You know, I often say that like in most smallmouth fishing, like you dictate where and when to cast, and you make the decision on, okay, this looks like a good spot here. I'm gonna cast in here, I'm gonna retrieve it like this, you know, and you're making that decision for yourself. But in this situation, almost like turns the table a little bit. Like the fish are doing their thing, you have to be ready, and they tell you when to cast and where to put it, and it kind of throws people for a loop a lot of times. Like I've seen some of the best casters I know just completely melt down and fall apart and unable to perform, you know, because it's just like, it's such a different deal, right? Like you can't wait, you know, it's like it's not on your terms, it's on theirs. And that I think what makes it so awesome and unique, right?
That's super cool, man. And it's yeah, like you kind of described it the first time you came on it, it looked like, you know, two guys hooked up at the same time. Like almost all your videos looks like, you know, three, four guys, you know, at least two guys are hooked up at any given time or getting blown up on or whatever. So, very cool. Do you notice like, this might be a dumb question, but, like in these schools of like 30 to 40 fish, do you notice all classes of fish kind of schooled up in the same group, or do they have like, do they kind of break down by size, or how do you kind of find that?
Yeah. When you find like a really good spot, or maybe you have like those bigger number of schools, that'll be a pretty good mixture of size classes. You will come across some where maybe be like, you know, 10, like a dozen, let's just call it a dozen fish, right? And more so in those instances, you'll find more like size classes of fish, right? But there's certain spots that are just like, you know, they're just like for some odd reason, the bait likes to be there, and it just draws everything there. And like, I bet, you know, a lot of times if you throw like a jig on and like bounce on the bottom, you'll catch walleye, right? There's like, it's like an oasis area, right? And the fish are like all drawn to what's going on there. But you know, the reason they're drawn there is the bait fish, and they can swim too. And so like, you know, one day it's there, one day it's not. You roll in like all feeling high and mighty that you're gonna really rock some people's socks off, and it's just like crickets.
Dude, I haven't told Chris this because the last trip I just took, Because, well, I guess I'll rewind a little bit. When I went to the upper West or the lower Wisconsin, I was actively like tuned in to any surface disturbance. I was like really hoping I would see it. I did not see it there. And I'm sure it's just a kind of a place and time thing. But I went to the Susquehanna this past weekend or week and a half ago. And I got invited to like a little bonfire thing, went and there's a guy that has a YouTube channel. He was like recording us, asking us about our day. And one of the guys there described exactly what you described, where now this is fall. They were clearly keyed on bait fish, and they were more of that like wolf pack mentality where if you see mm-hmm. one, you see 20. He described this where he was sitting on a ledge and then the water just erupted around him. And he said for 45 minutes, it was like every 2 or 3 minutes, they're just like 10 fish just go crazy. And then over here, 10 fish would go crazy and you just throw in there and got hit. And I was kind of like, that's really cool. I didn't know this guy. And I was kind of like, he might be a little full of shit because I've never seen that before. So fast forward to the next day, I had gone up to this ledge system and I was on a really good pattern where these fish were sitting in the like little creases between the ledges where the water was coming through. And I called my dad and I said, "Dad, you need to get up here. I'm catching 18 after 18. They were kind of like in this particular area. I thought it was cool." So he got up there, he cast, not getting bit. And out of the corner of my eye, I see this fit like the back of a smallmouth, like come out of the water. And it was about 50 yards downstream of me. And I went over there and dude, it was exactly what you described. It was like this. I've never seen it before. It had to, I would say anywhere from 20 to 50 fish. I it was hard to tell, but it was in this like really confined area. And all of a sudden, all at once, these fish just like boom, 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 boom. There was bait fish flying everywhere. And I was yelling at my dad. I was like, "Get over here." He like comes over there. I had a little like soft plastic jerk bait, surprise, surprise, tied on, throw it in there. These fish were hitting so violently. And I'm sure you run into this in these scenarios. They were hitting it with such reckless abandon. It was throwing my bait like 4 feet. Like they would hit it. It would knock my bait in the air. My bait would land. And then another fish would be right there. It hit it and it knocked it back over. And then finally wanted, you know, actually eat it. And I'd get a hook set. It was like, it was 20 minutes of that. Like, sure, yeah. Of like on, off, on, off. And it was harder to catch them than you would think. Like it was like, there's a lot of missed hook sets. You'd see it. You'd see these fish hit it and you'd set the hook in your bait, just come flying back at you. So it was cool, man. I couldn't imagine being able to see that in the summertime. That would be like if we see one fish run bait up on the shore, we're like, "Oh my God. Oh my God, let's throw over there, dude." If I saw that on a regular basis, I would like it would ruin me. Would. That's all I would want to do is go see if I can find that.
It'd be pretty boring to go back to fishing bottom, you know, somewhere. dude, that's pretty wild stuff. And how long do you think it took you to kind of get like, you think it was like maybe 2 or 3 seasons before you were like, "Oh, this is actually pretty consistent. I kind of, you know, I'm on them at least 50% of the time I go out, I'm finding the crash," you know, something like that.
Yeah. I mean, I think at that point, you know, the fish, I was largely pretty much the only one targeting them out there. And so, I mean, it was pretty reliable starting out, you know, and like kind of once I kind of figured out a couple of the spots, like you could, it was pretty reliable, I would say, you know, for, you know, and we had the first year I kind of really dove into it and was spending a lot more time out there. Like it was a pretty low water year. And so the water didn't fluctuate a whole lot. So like there was a little bit more consistency that year, which I think really helped things. But yeah, I mean, I generally go into a day pretty confident that I'm going to be able to find them, you know, and again, the hard part is like, I could show you the spot and you'd be like, "Well, that spot down there looks exactly the same. And like under the water, it looks exactly like why. And I still don't know why, right? It's there's more to it than I can figure out, I suppose, you know, at least at this point. But yeah, like all of a sudden, like this spot for some reason, you know, and there's certain things you'll look for, right? That like, okay, like this has got all the pieces. Are they here? Are they not? Right. I mean, it's fishing after all. You cast in there and sometimes you strike gold and sometimes you don't. But once you kind of figure out, like, you know, these fish are working this area pretty regularly, you kind of like check back in there, and all of a sudden, bang, you'll hit it when they're just going crazy in there. So,
And I'm assuming that, like, they don't, maybe I'm wrong, but like, is this like a more late June to mid August type thing? And like, they're not really doing it like at the beginning and the end of your season, or do they kind of have to do that all year to?
Yeah, they're kind of doing it all year, you know, but the thing about it is like you're going to get the most like violent and largest schools like during the like I would say little high water period of the summer.
Okay.
And then as we maybe get a dry summer and you hit to like mid-July, then it, like the water starts to drop a little bit and then the schools just aren't as big. They'll start to disperse a little bit more. I think the bait fish also, you know, they grow a little larger. They're able to cover a little bit more water, so they spread out. And so, like, everything, like, kind of mid-June really starts to disperse a lot more. You'll still come across your schools. They just won't be as big, you know. You're more like a, you know, 6 to 15 fish is probably more common than, you know, like your school of 50 of them. Yeah.
I mean, you guys probably run, do you run jets on the?
Yeah. Yep.
I figured.
Yeah. It's a difficult place to navigate.
Yeah. I mean, I can't imagine because it's pretty wide too. Right. Like, I mean, it's, yeah. So it, like a rowboat, I'm assuming it would be just a nightmare having to go.
Yeah.
Zigzag across the river the whole way.
Yeah. I see people do it. And I'm always like, oh man, I feel for you.
Well, you were out there on a kayak, weren't you, Josh?
Yeah, I had a electric motor on my kayak, but it was pretty. I was the whole time I was thinking, like, dude, this would be sick to bring our jets here because there's like no rocks to hit.
Yeah,
the pucker factor is like zero, which all the
I'll find a rock, dude. I will find
Chris,
a rock.
Chris finds his boulders, bud. Yeah.
You may think there are no rocks on that river. I'll find them and I'll crush my jet foot on them.
So. I know that if you jet that for very long though, dude, you're gonna bury your boat in on one of those sand flats. Cause like that like
you probably carry a shovel, right? You carry a shovel?
I don't, but I've got big oars and a winch.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah, I mean that river will go from where it's like 5, 6, 7 foot deep, and then next thing you know, it's like 2 inches deep. And it's kind of deceiving. It's hard to read the water the way that sand sets up because like a riffle with like rock, you can see the kind of like bumps, you know, in the water. That sand, it's lighter. Like if you can see it, but it's like overcast and you can't really see down in the water column that much, like. It's hard to look across and be like, yeah, that's a sandbar. That's a sandbar. That's a sandbar. It was a very like, it took me the first day I was like, dude, I don't know what to make of this place. Like, I was like, this is wild. It was like about 1 o'clock in the afternoon on the day that I got there, I finally got on some kind of pattern. I was like, oh, okay. There's actually our fish here. I was thinking like, dude, there's no smallmouth in this place. Like, what the heck, dude? Pretty wild. Does that river set up quite a bit different as you, cause the Dells, I've always like, it's a touristy type area and there's like these kind of bluff, like sheer walls. Is that, do you guys fish up kind of that way? And are those fish, do those fish relate a lot different to the river than like down further where it's like all sand, or do you fish up there at all?
You know, it's so kind of full of like, you know, they have like big jet boat rides and stuff like that, and so we generally avoid it through most of the summer months, you know. And it is, you know, for what I'm mostly doing is fly stuff, so I I don't really like the real deep sections. And because it is a little more canyon end up there, you know, you got the big rock cliffs and stuff like that. The water tends to be quite a bit deeper. And so unless they're eating on the surface, which they will up there for sure. It's just a little too noisy and busy for me.
Lower section to yourself, right? I mean,
for the most part. I mean, like, you don't just like you were saying, you're trying to find a bass angler down there. There's not that many, you know what I mean? It's mostly, you know, a guy out there catfishing or something like that. And most of those people don't go very far because they know how difficult and whatnot that river is. And, you know, if you break down out there, it's unless you run into me, you are probably going to spend the night out there. Because you can't like really necessarily walk out. I mean, it's like littered with poison ivy, and you know, it's just not a good place to break down. And most people know that or have learned that over time. And so, yeah. So I, you know, it's nice. I pretty much have, you know, quite a bit of seclusion out there. And so I just stick to those areas. Not to say that like any, like that, you know, there's great fishing up in the Dells, you know, there really is. Like, I just, you know, as a guide, like the experience I'm going for is just like looking around, not seeing other boats everywhere. So, yeah.
Yeah. I like that too. I think we all like fishing and not seeing other people. Yeah. So that, like the lower section where, you know, you guys spend a lot of your time, you know, we talk about like on our kind of fundamental type podcast where we talk about, you know, some of the like basics of how you break down a river. You know, I would say current and substrate are 1A, 1B for us. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, and when I went there, since I was like, well, the substrate's kind of like not, you know, there's no sand is sand, you know, obviously there's different depth than of sand. I was expecting cover to provide more of an element, which we don't really fish cover a ton. We do a little bit, but you know, we don't go out and target trees a lot. Is that a pretty big like component of where you find fish, like looking for like cover?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, like you think about it, like the sand is always in motion. Nothing can attach to it, right? So you can't even like, it's not bug life. There's nothing that can attach because it's just like in motion. And so like you fish the solid things, right? So whatever's solid out there is structure to you. And that's the best way to kind of explain it, you know, and, you know, as you have, you know, let's say a mid, you know, like just a piece of wood, right? And you have that current coming and that thing's solid and the sand isn't. So like something has to give, and that's the sand. And so a lot of times the current will hit those, that woody structure, and it'll dig a hole out. And so it can be, you know, 6 inches deep, as far as the eye can see all around you. But that, you know, like where that solid piece of structure is, it'll be, you know, maybe 2 feet deep along there because it digs itself out. And those smallmouth will sit in those little holes like that, you know? Yeah. But, you know, wood is good, you know, and bass like grass. So fish those things.
There you go. Josh t-shirt ideas. There you go, buddy.
Yeah.
I like that. What is good?
What is good?
Multiple meanings.
That's it.
Yeah. There are a lot of islands out there. That's what I like. A river with islands to me is like, I don't know. I guess I'm, well, for a couple of reasons. One, you mentioned that you were on a 3-day float. I assume that meant you're like camping. Are you doing, you camp on those islands? Is that a pretty common thing for you?
Yeah. Yeah. So like weekends out there are pretty busy with canoers. And that's like one of the neat things about the lower is that, any sandbar island, you can camp on, it's legal to do. You don't need a permit, you know? And so like the weekends are pretty busy with paddlers, who are out there to camp, and travel and, you know, but yeah, so I mean, we do a fair amount of that. And that's like one of the guide things I do is I have like a bass camp where we spend multiple days out there. We base camp out of off an island, and, you know, so you can fish right up till dark, come back, campfire the whole nine.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
That's fun.
Yeah, that's pretty sick.
Yeah.
The other part about islands I like is it just breaks up the river. So like yeah. you have, you know, if you have like a straight shot of river where it's like, you know, you got current, obviously there are things underneath the water, you know, but if you're fishing this style, especially fly fishing, kind of what you said, it's like, well, you know, you're doing a lot of visual stuff. It's mm-hmm. like highly visual. And anytime you have like an island, it creates just an abnormality in the river where fish relate to. And when I was out there, I was like, dude, it's a cool place. The islandy rivers we've been to, Chris would probably highly agree with this. Like those are some of the best, like most fun things just because there's just more to fish. Like there's more edge.
Yeah.
I'm assuming that they relate to that to spawn. I mean, I would think that spawning would be difficult just because of the way that the river bottom moves. Like, do you guys find that a lot that they just spawn behind islands? And
yeah, what are the
spawn classes like?
It's amazing that they are as populous as they are in that river, right. You know, and that they do as well as they do, because like you talk to the biologists and they're like, we don't know. I don't know how they, you know, doesn't make any sense, you know, like pencil it out. None of this makes any damn sense, but I mean, they do super well in that fishery. And, you know, there's lots of like, let's, you know, the driftless spring creeks were, you know, which are great, you know, trout fishing, you know, lots of tributaries of those. I know some of those fish will move up those and find, you know, more rocky substrate up there. A lot of them will spawn up by, you know, like the dams and stuff like that, where you have hard substrate. You know, they're survivors. They'll find it. You know what I mean? Like one of the best spots is like where a gravel boat launch is. I feel bad because people are always like running there, you know, like, I don't know how successful any of them are, but you'll see them there. Like they got their nest built right there. And like,
come on, man,
they're there. Like, and you roll up with your boat, and they swim off, and then you launch your boat and you come back and like, they're sitting there like, oh man, you gotta pick a better spot.
Dude, yeah, one of the coolest things that I've ever seen with related to spawning, Chris knows what I'm talking about, but it was an area where we had like, it was a tributary, it was a bunch of fish spawning, and like we were like kind of looking at the beds, and there was a section where it's like mud, it's like all mud, and you would assume it's like, oh yeah, there's no fish, no smallmouth spawning here, and they would blow out that mud. They would tail out that mud until it got down to these like freshwater clams. They were like freshwater clam like shells. They would fan that mud until it got down to the clams, and they lay their eggs on the clams. I was like, dude, that's so freaking cool that they do that. Tails
just destroyed, but yeah, they would do it.
Yeah, I don't know if you guys have ever seen that video, like the largemouth bass in the golf ponds, like picking up golf balls and making its nest out of golf balls. Like,
no, I haven't seen that.
Yeah, I don't know where I saw it one time. But yeah, they'll have like a pile of golf balls in the pond. And that's what they lay their eggs on.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, dude. I mean, do you guys have like, I guess in the way of population, obviously you've got good numbers there. But like Upper Wisconsin is like a trophy fishery. I mean, mm-hmm. you run into like heavy, you know, lots of 20-inch class fish, you know, lots of heavy fish. Do you guys have that down on the lower section, or do you find more the average is a little bit on the smaller side?
Oh, it's most certainly on the smaller side. I'd be the first one to tell you. It's not, you know, if you're looking for your trophy fish, like that's not the fishery to go to. You know, it's you fish that place for how unique it is and the experience of it in the wildness of the fishery, right? I mean, if you're looking for your 20, like you're going to want to head north where the water stays colder, the fish get older. You know, I think the fish down here live a pretty rough life because they're, you know, number one, the current's pretty strong down here and there's not a lot of slack water. Again, those sandy rivers, like it's all moving, like all the way up to the edges. Yeah.
And there is no slack water.
There is not slack water, right?
They're also eating really difficult prey.
Exactly. They work.
Fish. I mean, it's not as a slow moving idiotic crayfish, you know. That's
dude. Yeah. Those fish though, there's fish are stacked, dude. They are I know you're like talking down the like overall size, and you're right. Like I experienced that when I was up there, like sampling, you know, it's like a lot of that 15 to 17-inch fish, like mm-hmm. there's a lot of those.
Yeah.
I caught several 18s. dude, those 18s damn near pull my arm off. And in fact, I had one on that I was like during the tournament that was 18 and a half. I would have put any amount of money on it. That fish was 20 inches. I had a 7 foot medium heavy casting rod, dude, and it was ripping drag. Like, I was like, dude, it's gonna break my leader. I had 17 pound fluorocarbon. Yeah. It's like, it's gonna snap my leader. There was like nothing I could do. And I got that fish up, and dude, it was as tall as it was long. Like, it was, those fish were not all of them, but like a percentage of them, like, you know, 30% or so that you catch, dude, they were like, you could tell they've been eating really well. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's certainly a super healthy population. The fish in there are very healthy. But I think when they get to a certain length and age, like it's almost like a live fast, die young fishery, right? Like you look at the average age, they reach like, one of the biologists I talked to, I think he said that they reach like a 16 inch size, like a whole year or more faster than the average fish in the state. Like they grow super fast. Mm. And then they get to that like medium size, let's just call it the 15 to 17, right? And that's like, there's a ton of those fish in there, which I mean, no one's going to, you know,
no.
be sad yeah. about catching any one of those fish.
Catch right? those and, fish all day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and they're used to chasing down their food, right? And I know, I've seen it happen up north where like you got one of those big bass and he can just like, sit on his couch behind that nice boulder there and wait for a crayfish to come by and just like, you know, like he's burned like no energy at all. Right. But right. also like those fish, I don't think have the same swimming stamina as like these fish do. I mean, like a lot of these fish, like they don't get super, I mean, they get heavy, but they don't get that like big fat kind of like obese look to them. They like lean and mean. Because I think they're just always working those muscles, like chasing bait fish so hard all the time. Like they're, I mean, I have people who are like, well, we'll let them tire out, you know, like, I'm like, pal, you will tire out way before that fish will, you know, those things just like, they have no quit in them.
Yeah. That's an interesting, I'm assuming it has something to do with the fact that they're eating just like an extremely high protein. You know, like, mm-hmm. I mean, those fish have to be very nutritious, right? That they're eating as compared to the other garbage that fish eat. I mean, even like on the northern Wisconsin before, I've seen them with like a belly full of like dragonfly larvae and stuff like that. You know, so I don't know. It's interesting. The metabolic burn, like maybe the water temperature, but yeah, it's wild that they don't get, they kind of thin out or they just don't reach that like maximum size. I wonder what that is. All about
it's, you know, don't know for sure, but I do think water temperature has a lot to do with it as well. You know, like we'll see, you know, low to mid 80s sometimes, which, you know, that's pretty warm for a fish to get, you know up north they'll be like 20 years old. Like I don't think any of those fish are living that long down here.
That's man, it's what an interesting resource you've got. That's pretty cool. I mean, you're probably the only smallmouth guide that fishes the lower Wisconsin, aren't you? I mean,
for regularly, for sure.
Yeah. It's interesting, man. Well, hey, why don't you put out your like your social media stuff and talk a little bit about like how people can get signed up for the bass camp if it's not already full for this upcoming year. Because I think a lot of our guys would be interested in that. So
for sure. Yeah. And so like we do like the lower Wisconsin experience, we call that crash camp. And that's like kind of centered around finding the crash and like you're camping on an island, you know, no facilities, you know, or rustic camping, you know, nice tents, cots, the whole nine, but you know, you're not going to have a building to go into. And that one is like probably the highest in demand. It always has been. It's like our original camp. That one usually is a wait list. You can find out more about all the camps on just blackearthangling.com. And then we also do like more like we have a couple cottages that we'll use or we'll set you up there. And like we work with a team of chefs who are fantastic. And so we like it's kind of a plug and play. You show up here, like basically just get to us and the rest of it's all taken care of.
Like a Caribbean, like a fly fishing lodge type
situation. Yeah, basically. Yep.
That's cool.
And then in August we kind of like we work with groups to like kind of do their own custom camp. So you got, you know, put a group together to four guys and a couple, you know, figure out what your dates are. Usually we do a 2-night minimum and we'll, you know, we'll set it all up for you. However, you know, if you want to do more than 2 nights, great. And usually those types of situations, like that's what we become really known for and have really like specialized in. We have it like dialed in really well. Like you're going to have a fantastic experience, whether the fishing is tough or not. Like everything else is very polished and very good. And so if that's something, you know, you got a group of buddies and want to come up, you won't be disappointed. I guarantee it. Like, But you can find out more about that on the website there. And then we're pretty active on Instagram, just at Black Earth Angling Co. And that's where we're kind of keeping things fresh and putting out content most of the time. That's the way to find me. So,
the camping thing is there's a huge amount of guys that do that.
It's cool, dude.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of guys that do that.
I've never heard of a guy.
Just go out in my boat and I pack some peanut butter and jelly and we fish all day and catch fish. Like that's badass, dude.
Yeah.
So
you're cool.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, man. Appreciate you coming on the podcast. We're a little bit over an hour here, so definitely don't want to take too much of your time, but really appreciate you coming on. I think you guys have a really interesting, cool program. It's so unique, so different, very cool. I encourage all the guys listening to the podcast to check out his website. And, if you guys are looking to do the camp thing, shoot us a message. We may want to go. So
yeah, for sure.
Appreciate it. All right. Thank you guys. Thanks, Kyle. Appreciate you.
Yeah. Thank you guys. Appreciate it.
Hey, Kyle, stick on here, man. I want to talk you through for a sec, but before we go, got to give us a Free the Fighter.
Oh yeah. Free the Fighter. Of course.
Yeah. Free the Fighter for sure.
All right. Awesome. Thanks.
No.